Jubilant scenes in the United States greeted the news that the architect of 9/11, Osama bin Laden, had been killed by US special forces in Pakistan. He was, as you know, in a compound in Abbottabad, pretty much on the doorstep of Pakistan's chief military academy, to the embarrassment, apparently, of the Pakistan authorities. Writer, historian and commentator Tariq Ali was on this programme during a recent visit to New Zealand to deliver the Sir Douglas Robb lectures, and we thought we would catch up with him again to find out what this signal event means for, well, Pakistan-US relations for a start. Tariq Ali is on the line from Thessaloniki in Greece, where it's quite late. Thank you for talking to us again at this late hour.
Very good to be with you, Kim.
Is it possible that Pakistan authorities did not know that Osama bin Laden was there?
It is absolutely impossible. And it is not possible to take any Pakistani spokesperson seriously when they say we didn't know. Some years ago, I think it was in 2006, I was traveling back from Pakistan on a plane, and a guy came up and said to me, "Hi, you don't recognize me." And I said, "Forgive me, I don't." And he said, "I didn't forgive you when you were young. Why should I forgive you now?" And I said, "What do you do now?" And he covered his face with his hands and said, "You're going to kill me." I said, "Tell me." He said, "I'm a senior figure in the intelligence agency on my way to Europe to attend a conference of intelligence agencies on the war against terror." So I started talking to him and I said, "Look, I will never mention your name, but I need to know a few things. I'm working on a new book on Pakistan. Is Osama in a safe house in Pakistan?" And he didn't reply. And I said, "When you don't reply, I'll assume you mean yes. So if you don't reply, I'll assume that's yes, unless you say no." I said, "Is Osama in a safe house in Pakistan?" He didn't reply. So I then said, "Where is he?" And he burst out laughing and said, "If I knew, do you think I'd tell you? Of course I don't know." So I said, "How many people in the country know?" "Three or four." And he said, he didn't say it, but he showed me four fingers. I said, "Four. Can I guess who they are?" He said, he nodded. So I guessed. And I said, "If I know this and you're telling me, is it conceivable that the Americans don't know?" He said, "They know, but they've said they don't want him alive." So I said, "In which case, you could hand him over dead." And he said, "Why should we?" And then rather quaintly, he said to me, "Why should we kill goose that lays golden eggs?"
And what are the golden eggs?
The golden eggs were the enormous amounts of money the United States was pouring into the Pakistani military and intelligence networks in the country.
The United States gives Pakistan, as I understand it, more than $1 billion a year in security assistance.
Exactly. And that is what the golden eggs are. And so the thing is, Kim, this conversation I printed in my book on Pakistan, The Duel, no one took it up, which surprised me a bit. Maybe they didn't believe it. And I have to be honest with you, I did wonder after this conversation, is he sending me up? Could this be true? And then I said, no, it is true. I'm sure it's true. Because my instinct had always been that if he was anywhere, he was in a safe house somewhere in Pakistan where nobody would think of looking. And where better than to have it in the heart of a military district? I know the nearest town, Abbottabad, very well because my aunt used to live there. Lots of army officers, retired and serving, live there. It's a very lovely part of the country. And where this military academy is at Kakul is also very beautiful. So if there's a house there, I mean, most people would, not bother. But there's no doubt that the intelligence agencies knew. And the thing that I question and think about is the following. Did the Americans know where it was for a long time and decide to take him out now for particular reasons? And all this nonsense about we've been tracking him for 2 years, Or did they track him for 2 years because Pakistani intelligence wouldn't tell them? I don't know. I think the reason they didn't inform the Pakistani military they were carrying out this act is they thought it would be leaked. So there's a lot of answers to come out yet from it, but I think there's no doubt that it was known that he was there, certainly in Pakistan.
The relationship between the United States and Pakistan then, always complicated, has now become almost incomprehensible. We have the head of Pakistan's army angrily telling the United States not to do this kind of covert operation again. He's called it a misadventure.
Well, I mean, the WikiLeaks revealed to us that when the Americans carry out drone attacks on Pakistan, which have, by the way, up to date now, cost the lives of 19,000 innocent civilians, the WikiLeaks revealed that the Pakistani military and politicians said to the Americans, of course you can do it, we know you're doing it and that's fine, but their public anger is so great that we will have to deny it in public and say we didn't know. And the Americans said, fine, you do that. So is General Kiani's anger, fake anger, designed precisely to show that he's taking a tough stance, when in reality they've been agreeing to what the US are doing inside Pakistan for ages?
Well, it's a kind of a double game that somebody's going to get caught out on sooner or later, isn't it? I mean, when he accuses the United States of violating the sovereignty of Pakistan, that sounds like it's directly addressed to the people of Pakistan, who are
Without
already angry
doubt.
About that.
Huh? Yeah, no, there's great anger in Pakistan that the sovereignty is violated so frequently. I mean, a few months ago, you remember that Raymond Davis episode, where a special forces officer killed two Pakistanis in the middle of Lahore, and the Americans panicked, and Obama went on television and lied through his teeth and said he's a diplomat, and they immediately sent diplomat passports in the name of this guy for him. But the Pakistanis actually said, no, he isn't a diplomat. You know, he hasn't got a diplomat passport. We've got his passport. And I'm now wondering whether that had anything to do with what finally happened later. But there was a big hue and cry. And finally, the way they solved it, ironically enough, that Raymond Davis case, they released him by using the Sharia law, a religious law, according to which if X is killed, Y, Y's family can forgive X, provided X pays a massive amount of compensation. And that's what the Americans did. They paid the relations of these two young people killed in Lahore a lot of money, and the family accepted it.
Do you think that the American people are going to tolerate the United States dishing out vast amounts of money to Pakistan in security assistance when Pakistan now looks like it's pocketing it with one hand and helping terrorism with the other?
Well, I think the Americans need the Pakistanis because as long as the NATO are in Afghanistan, there is no way they can even run that war without Pakistan. And if they're going to pull out, the Americans will need the Pakistanis as their key people to work for them in a post-withdrawal government. So they are stuck. And the mess in Afghanistan makes them completely dependent on Pakistan, regardless of this incident.
Well, it sounds like it's time then for the US government to start making Pakistan look better in all this by saying, well, actually, they helped us a lot. Thank you very much.
Well, they have said that, to be fair. I mean, you know, they have said Pakistan's been very helpful on many other fronts, et cetera, et cetera, precisely to cover their backs, because they know they can't do without the Pakistanis as long as they're engaged in the war in Afghanistan. Once they decide to get out, and the sooner they do, the better, then they'll dump Pakistan, as they did the last time. And then all they say, it could disappear very quickly. But till they're in Afghanistan, they can't do that.
Do you think that the death of Osama bin Laden affects anything in Afghanistan?
Nothing at all. Kim, and you know, I've said as much. It makes no difference at all. It's utterly irrelevant to Afghanistan or anywhere else in the Islamic world. It will have no impact. Where it does have an impact is the United States, because it, of course, now makes Obama virtually impregnable for the 2012 elections. It's going to be impossible to defeat him unless the economy collapses. And the way he's playing it, it's really a re-election bid. There's a very, very vicious but funny cartoon in The Guardian 2 days ago in London, drawn by Steve Bell, their in-house cartoonist, showing Obama as a mobster with a mobster's hat. And in on his lap are tabloid papers saying, "Gotcha, we killed him." And wrapped in them is a fish with a little beard.
However, what was the man to do?
What was the man to do? I mean, the question is, why this particular time? And I think... I really think it was dominated by electoral needs in the United States. The Archbishop of Canterbury, when I left London this morning, had given a very strong statement saying killing an unarmed man in this way is unacceptable. And criticism is beginning to mount because there are lawmakers who feel they should have taken him alive, arrested him, and tried him and charged him in a court of law so that justice could have been seen to have been done. And the euphoria in the United States has completely ignored that legal side, though in Britain and some other European countries, the questions are being posed.
And ironically, I suppose, all those people who were demanding Osama bin Laden's birth certificate to prove that he was in fact born in the United States and not in Kenya will now start saying that Osama bin Laden...
Nothing satisfies those guys, Kim.
No.
I mean, you know, they're nutters. I mean, they'll say that the birth certificate is forged. I mean, once you're deeply immersed in conspiracy theories, you never accept anything. It's like when I'm in the States talking, people still get up and say, "Tariq, are you sure? Are you 100% sure we didn't knock down those towers ourselves?" And I, an outsider, have to say, "Yes, I'm 100% sure. Please stop this." So nothing convinces people. And, you know, this paranoia in the United States is a reflection, actually, if one's being serious for a minute on this, that people really don't trust their governments. They just don't believe them, and then they become completely nutty.
Yes, but according to you, Tariq, they're right not to trust their governments.
No, they're right not to trust their governments, of course. I agree with that. But, you know, to sort of ignore realities, like a lot of people are saying now, including in the States, including Americans, white Americans, that this didn't happen now. Obama's body had been kept in deep freeze since 2003, and they have now brought it out at this particular point in time. No evidence at all for that. None. And, you know, it's just nonsense. But they say it.
The weird thing, just getting back to the whole idea of Osama bin Laden being in Pakistan for who knows how long, Pakistan, as I understand it, is not a place for keeping secrets.
No.
So there must have been quite a few people who knew this.
Well, I don't think quite a few, because they can keep secrets when they have to. When they were building their nuclear bomb, it was a very well-kept secret. I mean, I knew that it was happening because I talked to people, but not many did. Or people said, "No, it's impossible." So, no. They can keep secrets. So while people suspected, like myself, that he was there, the actual location was kept a secret. I think, I really believe that guy who talked to me on the plane, that apart from three or four people, no one else knew. And if you don't know the location, then it's just empty talk.
All right. Risks of retaliation are fairly obviously quite high, don't you think?
Well, I mean, there was some commentator, actually Alan Nann, a veteran American journalist, saying on Democracy Now! In New York, you know, how would we feel if someone targeted Bush's farm on Crawford, Texas, on exactly the same grounds that he'd killed a lot of people and took him out. There'd be mayhem if that happened. But there probably will be retaliation, though intelligence sources all over the world say that it's worth remembering, and I think this is true, that after the hits of 9/11, they could never do anything that remotely came close to it. They couldn't. And Al-Qaeda is a very, very weak force. It was disintegrating anyway, long, long before. The membership figures which we get now from various sources are maximum in South Asia of 200 to 300 people, in Yemen of under 100 people, which is tiny. So I think possibly there will be retaliation, but I don't think anything on that scale. What is more likely is that certain individuals might be targeted.
What do you mean, certain individuals?
Well, I mean individuals responsible for war crimes in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and elsewhere. You know, the great political leaders of the international community who feel that what they do can never be actually come to a court of law. You know, Bush, Blair, people like that who took their countries to an illegal war in Iraq. Politicians today who are killing in Afghanistan. That is the only thing these people, I think, now are capable of doing.
But Al-Qaeda is not known for its targeted attacks. It's more known for its mass indiscriminate attacks.
Al-Qaeda is a very tiny force now, and, you know, it has done targeted attacks usually on installations, like when they targeted, you know, tiny boat road to the USS Cole in Arab waters and blasted it. So they do target American installations and American soldiers, but I don't think that they have the capacity to do that. The other thing, which is, you know, quite important, is that given the changes taking place in the Arab world itself, the sympathy which these events might have gained 10 years ago, even by people who don't support terrorism, saying, well, we're glad someone got hit, look at what they've done to us, that is now changed. The Arab world itself is changing. So tolerance of this sort of activity is on the decline.
That's ironic, don't you think?
Well, it is and it isn't, because if you have an elected government, let's say the last opinion polls in Egypt last week showed that 50.3% of the population said they were not happy with the peace treaty with Israel and it should be renegotiated. They were just not happy. Civil society groups were taking out demonstrations outside the Israeli embassy. When these things are done democratically with mass support, then people feel that this is the way forward. It's not through tiny groups of people throwing bombs and killing.
Very good to talk to you. Thank you. Tariq Ali, historian, writer and commentator, talking to us from Thessaloniki.